card-specific games in the U.S., but the quality is fine, but it's not like the how good it is with my Chinese manufacturers. And the cost is so expensive. So, for example, gosh, I haven't had a quote for a long time from an American manufacturer, but it's usually 4 times the cost or more than the Chinese manufacturer, which means it doesn't work. It's untenable. Can't make that work. Can't make numbers like that work.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's just about all the time that we have for today. Amy, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us. It's been a delight.
Before we go, please promote yourself and where people can find your new game and you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. You can find me at pinktigergames.com. I'm Pink Tiger Games everywhere. Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok. And you can find my games at most of the wonderful game stores in Portland, Oregon, as well as Amazon, Necessary Evil, and Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Very happy to be in all the different places. And my Kickstarter for Pet Names, A Game of Endearments, will hopefully be launching in June because of the tariffs. We have had to move things around.
Well, thanks again. And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org. And you can find us on Instagram at winnersbias. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. Help us reach our Camp KBU Summer Membership Drive goal of $50,000 before June 29th. You can go to kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you spread positivity across the table. Have a good one.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer and professor at Rutgers University, Leah Devon. Leah is talking about her show Resemblance, which is on now through May 31st at Blue Sky Gallery in Old Town. Thank you very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Leah.
Thanks so much for letting me talk to you about my work. I'm so pleased to be on the show.
Yeah, we met first Thursday. You were in the middle of a big night. You know, we just chatted, but I got to see the pictures, you know, in person, close up. We're going to look at them on screen right now. But they are beautiful. Are they medium format color prints?
They are. They're medium format. They were taken with a Mamiya 645 film camera. So they're all analog, old school type photographs.
On a negative. Oh, wow. Okay. And they're very intimate. These are family pictures. So just set us up. Well, it's called Resemblance. And who are the subjects of the pictures?
Yeah, the subjects are my own family, my partner, who's a transgender man, and our son, who we're raising together. And the photographs just take an intimate eye on our own queer and trans family, which I think really I started to do 3 years ago with the sort of escalation of anti-LGBT and especially anti-trans rhetoric that was happening in the larger political sphere. And I became so concerned at, and wanted to do something. And so I ended up starting to document our daily life in the midst of what we were experiencing.
Yeah. Well, what was the idea of that? Like, what? How can the personal be political in this context?
I do think that the personal is often political, but I think in this context, just to say a little bit more about what's been happening, I think many of your listeners might know, but some may not, that over the last couple of years, there's been a real ramping up of anti-trans legislation. There's been a Supreme Court case, a ban of gender-affirming care. There have been hundreds of anti-trans and anti-queer laws, like don't say gay laws, don't say they laws, just a whole lot of them. And there's also been a sort of increase in a kind of anti-LGBT rhetoric that is a kind of old stereotype, some might call it a groomer stereotype, this idea that queer and trans adults can't be trusted around children. And often when people are talking about trans people in the media, they're often talking about some abstract person, you know, this trans person they've never met. They don't know any trans people. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, abstract trans person is mm-hmm. just kind of this, you know, this image that we can't really focus on. So here I wanted to be really, really specific about who we are as trans and queer people. And I think my work is just really kind of frankly representational of real people and not some kind of abstract that's just a sort of a symbol for politics by people who mm-hmm. can't really imagine who these real individuals are.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the viewers, the listeners should know that they're mostly domestic scenes, people lying around, sort of cuddling, lying on the bed, sitting on a couch, maybe paddling in the, you know, in the pool, or close-ups of faces, that kind of thing. There's one that really stands out. You call it picture window. It's your son and your son's father sitting on a couch, and they're in front of a window in a kind of suburbia, and there's a lot of potted plants between them and around them. It's, you know, it's a bit like David Hockney's Mr. and Mrs. Clark and Percy. It's this sort of posed. Actually, they're not on a couch. They're on two big armchairs. The son has a red top and sort of khaki pants. The dad, oh, there are two different ones. The dad has a green top in one and then a blue top in another. Okay, untangle me here, please, Leah.
Yeah, I think it's because you're looking at a couple of different versions from a previous show. Yeah, okay. That's absolutely fine. The image is picture window. But before I delve into that specifically, yeah. I just want to answer a little bit about what you were talking about the domestic, because I think it's so important and so central to what I wanted to do with these photographs. The images are everyday life, and they're taken around our home and around my parents' home. Picture window actually is in my mom and dad's suburban New Jersey home. So yeah. They're images that are really taken in an interior of the house or nearby the house. And a lot of what's happening in them is just, as you say, sort of everyday activities. We're napping, we're playing cards, we're, you know, swimming in the backyard, we're doing sort of simple, straightforward activities. And I think that connects back to what you were saying about the personal being political, because I think when we think about big political movements, we, and especially when we're talking about queer and trans movements, often we're thinking about the politics as like a, you know, a pride parade, or right, people are out in the streets, mm-hmm. people are out in the clubs. It's kind of these like big social gatherings and these big out in the world kind of movements that are political. Mm-hmm. But what I really wanted to get people to think about is the way our everyday lives are political too. And the way that we make our family, the way that we make a home, the everyday sort of work that we do to care for other people, that work is all political too. We don't always see it. And we don't even always imagine what people are doing when they're not doing those kind of like big spectacle mm-hmm. things. But I think that that's an important part of visualizing how all those everyday choices add up to, you know, something that really matters in our bigger sphere of politics, and can also open our minds to what kind of lives are possible. So I just wanted to say a little bit about why I chose to make these images in such a domestic kind of way. Mm-hmm. But to come back to the picture window, mm-hmm. that I think really speaks to some of the themes of the show and also to the theme of resemblance. So like I said, it's taken in my parents' house. So I'm definitely thinking about families, my family, my parents, me now as a parent, you know, this is my partner and my child. I think that it's interesting because when you're a queer family, people always want to know who resembles who, you know, mm-hmm. who sure. gave birth,
they want to know, oh, so who's a man, who's a woman, you know,
of course, yeah, right, they want to know all that stuff, and you know, so they look at my partner and my son and they're like, oh, he does look like you, oh wait, no, you know, how does he look like you, and so I think people are often trying to figure out kind of what is the pattern or relationship, and they're doing it often in terms of like gesture or, you know, or your face, you know, how do you resemble somebody? So mm-hmm. I really wanted to think about the way that we mirror mm-hmm. people and the way that mirror might be something different than what might be imagined in a, you know, a typical straight family. And then I'm also thinking about the way I resemble my parents, you know, are the way our life diverges and resembles, you know, the kind of lives that we, you know, that we were brought up to imagine could be our lives. And then also all of those plants. So if you could see the image, my partner in center seated in a chair and in a sort of take on traditional portraiture, you know, which has been around for a long time. And they're surrounded by all these like very nouveau plastic artificial plants. My mom has a huge collection of artificial plants. So they are all part of my mom's house plants.
Okay. Now, did you arrange them for the shot, or were they always between the chairs?
I took them from the different spots in her living room and bedroom and gathered them around. But they are all, I guarantee, ones that my mom owns in her home. and so I was really interested in, you know, in the way, you know, in portraiture often, you know, plants and flowers are a part of it, and thinking about, you know, the way we fit with the natural world. But I think for our family, I really wanted to think about, you know, what is natural and what is artificial? You know, what looks on the surface one way but might... you might invite inquiry about, you know, how things really exist or come into being, and to also kind of tap back at some of those questions about, you know, like, how did you have this baby? You know, what was involved in terms of technology? So I really wanted to think about all those kinds of layers in that image. So to me, I mean, it is a simple, straightforward picture of people looking at the camera, but it also has a lot of thought behind it. And I'm actually also in the picture too. I'm reflected in the window. So it's also kind of a mirror looking back at myself.
Mm-hmm. So the dad's pose is pretty masculine, you know, hands in the lap and straight back, you know, cowboy boots or, you know, boots and jeans. Did you pose your subjects or you let them just pick their own presentation?
Well, they pick their own clothes. Those are their own clothes. I manage them a little bit and like, don't wear black, don't wear, you know, this pattern, but beyond that, those are their own normal clothes. So,
yeah.
So those are their, you know, their way of dressing and representing themselves. But I'm definitely interested in masculinity, right? And how we make an image that looks like a man, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of a photograph, but in also in terms of, you know, how a person fashions themselves, you know, what the clothes are that they put on, how they carry themselves in the world, what are their belongings that connect them to masculinity or allow themselves to be recognized as masculine. So in the larger body of work, there are a lot of images of objects that I think kind of we associate with manliness. You know, there's images of kind of like this leather man's chair and a belt, and my partner's night table that has all of their wallet and watch and, you know, just sort of kind of an assortment of items that make me think about not just a man, but a father. And I think that we all kind of have an image in our mind of what a father looks like. And while it might be different for everybody, there are kind of some visual cues, I think, that come out and that I really wanted to think about with these images.
One of the images, it's of a torso wearing a chain that says daddy, a sort of gold in Gothic writing. And then the torso has huge tattoos of sort of traditional flash art tattoos of birds and I think an eagle and then the name Macaulay. But the person's looks like they've had top surgery. There are scars under the nipples. What is that image?
That's my partner's chest with their shirt off. So yeah, they're heavily tattooed and you can see their top surgery in the image. And also they're wearing this necklace, a nameplate necklace that says daddy. So I really wanted to play with the idea of, you know, daddy as a father, but daddy also has a lot of queer connotations in the community. So I wanted to play with those kind of double meanings of, you know, a dad and also a daddy.
Mm-hmm. Another image is of a pair of them just playing cards on a bed and they're both sort of angled towards the camera. You know, they're at 90 degrees to each other and the bed has sort of a rumpled kind of, it looks like turquoise velvet sheet. You know, they're intently staring at the card game. All the cards are turned face down. They're in a pile in the middle. What's the game and why did you pick this sort of scenario with this sort of still life kind of velvet drapery, you know, you'd find in an oil painting?
You're spot on. It's meant to capture a sort of historical type of oil painting, kind of Baroque sort of velvety. It's our bedroom, so our bedroom really does look like that.
Oh, okay. And you live in a Caravaggio bedroom.
I do live in a Caravaggio bedroom. I have dark blue walls and a blue bedspread in our bedroom. So that's our real bedroom. And it is a play on absolutely a Caravaggio and a genre Baroque painting called The Card Players. So it's really imagining itself in a long tradition of art history. And I think that I really wanted to position our family in a sort of canon of images of you know, that we think about as kind of belonging to a lineage, right? Mm-hmm. And in this case, they really are playing Go Fish. That's a game.
Oh, okay. It's not Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, you ask the other person if they've got a card and they have to tell you. And I think my partner said a few things about that game, which is that it's really a silly game. It's a game for a young child, but it's something that they still enjoy playing. So my son recently turned 14, mm-hmm. and it's kind of nice to see, you know, what changes and what your kid doesn't want to do with you anymore, mm-hmm. as they become a teenager. And then the sort of things that are nostalgic and still sort of fun, like a game like Go Fish, like playing cards,
yeah.
and how spending time together in moments like that can be an opportunity to have, you know, to have a conversation to, mm-hmm. and we also noticed that sometimes these conversations happen more easily when it's not so bright. And so mm-hmm. I noticed that we are starting to do more things that are like a little bit dim, watching TV together, playing cards together. And, you know, they also speak to some of the issues of sort of domestic life that I wanted to get at, because mm-hmm. I think that these images, they, are meant in part to be a little bit of a kind of visual oasis, because like I said, what we hear in the news and what we see on social media that has to do with queer and trans life, well, a lot of it is bad news. You know, a lot of it is really about struggle. It's about oppression and violence. And it's not that that isn't all true. I mean, all those stories are really important and they need to be told. But when that's kind of all you're hearing and seeing, it can kind of wear on you. I know that I have kind of a limit to the bad news that I can absorb. And so part of what I wanted to do with these images was to also have kind of like a counter set of images of, you know, queer and trans life that is full of calm and safety and simple gestures, and that can be like a little bit of like a peace in the storm, mm-hmm. that we're going through. Mm-hmm. I hear all the time when I meet with young trans people that they don't really believe that they'll live to adulthood. And they definitely have a hard time imagining themselves being old. And so part of these images, with their sort of serenity and also their picturing people who have lived and survived to middle age. I mean, we're both 50. I want to try to communicate to young queer and trans people that you know, it's not all going to be bad. You know, it's not all struggle, and you don't have to die young. Not that I want to idealize or say, here's this family where nothing bad happens. And I think there's a little bit of that tension with the light and dark. And it's why I'm so drawn to those Caravaggio-esque Baroque chiaroscuro images, because they do have in themselves a tension, right? There's the light and the dark even within the image.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer and Rutgers professor Leah Devon. She is talking about Resemblance, which is her photographic show on now through May 31st at Blue Sky Gallery in Old Town. Just to keep going back to the card game and maybe the Hockney image, if that was conscious, do you use high art as a way of legitimizing what you're doing? So like you're saying, I want to tie this into a history of visual reference. Does it sort of legitimize it, you know, make it people think, oh, you know, this is arty, or is it something else?
Well, I am a historian, and mm-hmm. I am very embedded in looking at images that are art historical and yeah. from that early modern period. So I am thinking about, you know, the sort of drama and pageantry and velvet and curtains, which I think bring a kind of a drama and a sense of a question of what's real and what's performance and mm-hmm. a photograph and personally, but I don't exactly want to say that I'm legitimizing, because I do think that we don't need the audience or hostile people to legitimize our lives, yeah. right? We have legitimacy anyways. Mm-hmm. But I do want someone to reflect on, where do we exist in time, right? Where do we exist in history? Where might you expect or not expect to see images of people like this and a family like this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think when we start thinking about history and queer and trans history, we can start to reflect on, you know, not only is this a lineage and, you know, that the image refers to, and does it kind of bring a canonical sense to it, but also helps us to reflect on, you know, what might we not have seen in history that might be there, right? Mm-hmm. Or what kind of images of what a family is do we take from history that kind of shape all of our imaginations of what we think a family should look like. So I guess if, you know, somebody's going to sit and really think about these images, I want all those possibilities to be there in the image, to be an invitation to reflect on all of these. But I don't think that we need history or art to make our lives matter now or to justify that we should exist.
Yeah. Another image that really struck me was father and son in the pool together, and the son is like riding on the father's back, and you've got this beautiful swimming pool effect where it's partially reflective and partially, you know, you can see quite through to the bottom of the pool, the father's hands on the bottom and knees, and then this son sort of floating on his back. You know, it's a very tender moment, but it's also an amazing photo where what's under the surface looks very different from what's on the surface. Tell us a bit about how you set that shot up and how you shot it.
Well, that's beautifully said, that there's something about what's under the surface and on the surface. I love what you've said about it. So we have a little backyard, and in our little backyard, we have a little waiting pool. So I will say that the pool is hardly any bigger than the frame of the photo. During the pandemic, like a lot of people, we spent a lot of time in our home and yard. Mm-hmm. And I will say that these images really do sort of emerge from a pandemic mentality and a pandemic focus on what we're doing here in the home. And so we got one of those little pools for our backyard, and we all played in it a lot over the summer. But I think one of the things that's so nice about the image that my partner reflected on is that our son is really pretty big, too big to pick up, right? Mm-hmm. But in the pool is still one of those moments where you sort of lose gravity, right?
Yeah.
And the size of your body doesn't matter so much. And mm-hmm. he was still able to kind of lift up and support our son as if he was much younger. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, that image has all the kind of the visual aspects that you were talking about the surface, about the blue reflecting the water and the sky. And to me, it is still kind of one of these art historical images. It's almost like a, you know, like the Pucci angels and the blue fresco ceiling. but it also kind of speaks to what it is to be a parent as you watch your child age and become almost as big as you, and not be able to be lifted up in your arms in the same way. But this also being one of those moments where you can kind of recover that for a second and be a full support for your child. And my son's look on his face is just so poignant in that image, because he just looks really cared for. That's part of what I wanted to capture in that moment. And that is actually a very spontaneous photograph. Most of my photographs, because the kind of camera I use, have a ton of strobe lights and I'm light meter kind of thing. And, you know, they are often, my family's doing something and I'm like, hang on, let me go get my light. But that one really was just all natural light.
I was going to ask, that's all natural light, right? And are you able with a medium format camera to hop around and be spontaneous?
A little bit. I mean, it's true that the kind of camera I use is not as spontaneous as another kind of camera. I mean, I do use a 35 millimeter camera too, which is much lighter. My camera is pretty large, and the lens I use it needs a lot of light. So I prefer to work with a strobe kit, which is a kind of flash that you can position around, but it also does take a little bit of time. So it's hard to get the spontaneous image. Mm-hmm.
Just quickly, there's a picture I love of a bicycle that's locked up in a kind of grungy room, looks like a basement maybe. And then there's two gold balloons, coming a number 11. So the two wands, helium balloons, tied to the back wheel, and they go up and they're touching the ceiling. And I was wondering what was going on there.
That is one of the first photographs I took, actually, right after my son's 11th birthday. Mm-hmm. And that is the basement of our apartment. It's called After the Party. It's an image of the balloons that we used during the party that then I went to the store in the basement and was trying to figure out what to do with them. But then also I feel like they're very cheerful, but they are also a little bit deflated. They sort of speak to some of the joint celebration and also a little letdown of, I think, both childhood and parenthood.
Right. So it sounds like you're always on the lookout for a metaphor.
Well, maybe not in every case. I think
if one presents itself, you'll run and get your camera.
That's absolutely true.
And I just, there is so much variety in these pictures. I mean, in one, the father is holding a sheet of bubble wrap over his whole head and shoulders and looking through. And again, it's on this dark greeny blue background.
Again, that's my bedroom wall. So some of the images that might look as if they're in a studio or have some special backdrop are really just me taking advantage of the colored walls in our house. And we were painting the room, I think, when those images were taken, and we had a lot of blue tape and scrap material and packing material. And so that image was just kind of taking advantage of that moment. But I think the fact that the wrap is over my partner's face and sort of obscuring the look that we can, the way that we can clearly see the figures in the image, coming back to metaphor, maybe I do think too much, but I was thinking about the way that these surfaces and these sort of barriers to our vision, which come up in the images a lot, are ways of thinking about what visibility means, right? The twin opportunities and dangers of visibility. It's in some ways necessary, but in some ways it's scary. And I feel that way too right now with making these photographs and displaying them, because when people can't see you, that, you know, there are a number of problems, but when people can see you, there are problems too. And I think those are that we really wrestle with as photographers.
So, Leah, I heard M. Gessen or Marsha Gessen on the radio the other day on OPB talking about trans visibility and how the more visible trans people have become recently in the last two decades or so, the more easier they are to scapegoat or persecute. You know, you compared it to Jews in Nazi Germany. Where do you stand on this idea of trans visibility as a kind of double-edged sword?
I definitely agree with the idea that visibility is a double-edged sword, and certainly M. Gessen would know a lot about this, considering their background and their familiarity with the LGBT experience in Russia. I guess I would want to say that I'm hearing a lot about this, and a lot of people who are in queer and trans photography have talked about being more cautious about what sorts of places outside of the community they make their work visible in, both because of the sort of surveillance that we have now on social media and kind of in the wider media, and also because of some of the broken relationships with museums and universities that queer and trans people feel when grants are being lost. There's pressure on some of those institutions not to show work that's going to be controversial. So sometimes it can feel like when visibility is tokenized, when it's profitable, when it's edgy and useful for institutions, then we get visibility. And when it's risky, when there's a cost to it, these institutions are less interested in giving that visibility. So I think that that's part of it. I also think that the media has created a lot of the pushback or backlash that we're seeing against trans rights and trans visibility by creating so many stories and really chasing, I think, a lot of clicks and engagement with stories about trans people. So I think a lot of trans people are just trying to live their lives, and they don't need or want that kind of magnifying glass on trans life. But I don't think that trans and queer folks are to blame for this backlash or for the way that being in the public eye now has gone hand in hand with so much negative attention and negative rhetoric. We deserve to be able to live and document and circulate our representations of our lives, our culture, in whatever way we want. And if people are more privy to that, we don't deserve to have the kind of legislative and political efforts against us that we have right now. So I guess I would say that it's not an inevitability that visibility leads to scapegoating. It's a choice that people make when they write these stories and when they consume these stories. So I guess I would ask viewers and readers to come to this with less prurient interest, less clickbait curiosity, and more empathy and more identification and more trying to see all of us as deserving of everything that they want for themselves.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Leah Devon, photographer and a professor at Rutgers University. Leah was talking by Zoom about Resemblance, which is her show of photography on now through May 31st at Blue Sky Gallery in Old Town. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus for the first time, Leah.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really a pleasure.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Está sintonizando KBOO Portland, tu radio comunitaria a través del 90.7 FM KBOO Portland y en línea a través de KBOO.FM.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo.